Welcome in, Outkick Podcast. Loaded show for you. Todd Furman in hour one and hour two. Ovik Roy, he's phenomenal. We just recorded a long form podcast. Encourage you to listen. Dr. David Chow in the third hour. If you're listening to me in Virginia or if you are listening in Michigan, go sign up right now. FanDuel.com/Clay. Sports gambling is now legal in both of your states. FanDuel.com/Clay. The Outkick Podcast begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
All right, boys and girls, the NFC and the AFC championship games are officially on Sunday, and we're going to be breaking these down for you like crazy. We've got a loaded show for you, a lot of different angles to hit on those games. But I want to start with what I was thinking about overnight. Patrick Mahomes right now is the NFL's version of Michael Jordan. Let me explain and unpack why I say that. A lot of people want to say, and I've probably even said it on this show, that Patrick Mahomes is the Tom Brady of his generation. And there is some accuracy to that. I really do believe that Mahomes is going to go to 5 or 6 Super Bowls at least before his career is over, assuming he stays healthy. He may well go to his second straight Super Bowl. We know he's going to be playing in his third straight AFC championship game on Sunday. But if you look at Tom Brady, for most of his career, he had a clear rival, and that rival was Peyton Manning. It was impossible to think about Tom Brady without also thinking about Peyton Manning. And typically in sports, that's what we end up with. We got Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal. We've got Tiger Woods. You've got Phil Mickelson. There are guys that you may be fans of, but there's somebody else that also has a large fan base. Doesn't mean that, for instance, in the case of Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, that one can't be better than the other, clearly. It just means that they are rivals on the stage going head-to-head. And to me, if I look at Patrick Mahomes, what is most striking about Patrick Mahomes' career so far is that's not him. There is no Peyton Manning to his Tom Brady. And that's why if you look in the annals of sports, really Patrick Mahomes right now is a lot more like Michael Jordan. There were a lot of good players in the Michael Jordan era Bulls. There was nobody else who was able to ascend to his level. There were just different challengers that rose up and got knocked down because they weren't as good as Jordan. Think about it with me. Clyde Drexler, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp. I can name a lot of different teams back in the day, Isaiah Thomas, that eventually Jordan vanquished. But for nearly a decade, because if you really counted those two championships that the Rockets won, they weren't really, to me, Rockets championships. Because Jordan wasn't playing then. There was Jordan ascendant on the stage, and then there was everyone else. Charles Barkley, Danny Ainge, you name all the different guys, KJ. If you're a 1990s era NBA basketball fan, like I was, a Jordan era basketball fan, like many of you were listening right now, you recognize that. And you may be thinking to yourself, you know what? He's got a point. There was never any one challenger on the stage with Michael Jordan. He didn't have a Larry Bird to his Magic Johnson. They weren't raised up and elevated together in a rivalry that ended up captivating the nation. Now, the Bulls and the Knicks had a rivalry. The Bulls and the Suns had a rivalry. The Bulls and the Sonics had a rivalry. Certainly the Bulls and the Pistons had a rivalry, but by the time the Bulls won, the rivalry was over. and it didn't continue, and it wasn't one where suddenly somebody else could come back. For 8 years there, really, when Jordan took off the 2 years in the middle, I still think you have to say that was the Jordan era, because there wouldn't have been anybody else that was able to compete with the Bulls if Jordan had never stepped away and had continued. I think Jordan will have won 8 years in a row. Could that be what we're dealing with right now with Patrick Mahomes? Now, there are certainly complications. It's not the exact same scenario. Some of you can easily point out, well, it's easier to dominate in basketball than it is in football. That's true. Because Michael Jordan gets to be on the court for 40-plus minutes out of 48 minutes of every game. He gets to play on the offensive and defensive sides. There's only five guys on each side as opposed to 11. There isn't special teams. There is an ability to dominate in basketball that is much easier than it is in football. But with what you are seeing from Tom Brady, you are also seeing the incredible importance that the quarterback position continues to elevate. And by the way, you could also say, as a part of the argument for why it's much easier to dominate in basketball, you get seven games. Seven-game series, the best team typically wins. Even if you have one bad game, you don't have to worry about losing the series. In a seven-game series, you get the opportunity to go head-to-head a lot of different times, and in theory, we get to test everybody, whereas in football, crazy things can happen. Patrick Mahomes can get knocked out of the game with a borderline concussion, and his team can nearly lose through no fault of his own. He's not allowed to play the final 20 minutes of the game. His running back can fumble the ball three times. His wide receiver can knock the ball up into the air, and it can get picked off by somebody. Looks like an interception on the stat sheet, even though it could be a perfect throw. There's no doubt that football is more complicated and it's harder for one player to dominate, but think about how many titles Tom Brady would have had if Peyton Manning didn't exist. And instead, there had just been a lot of other talented guys stepping up to try to challenge Tom Brady while he sat on the throne of NFL football. That's where we are right now with Patrick Mahomes. And that is why I think this Josh Allen challenge is so intriguing and fascinating. Because people like conflict. And in the world of the NFL, we have had a lot of people try to manufacture rivalries for Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson was going to be that guy. Look at what happened to Lamar Jackson when Patrick Mahomes went on the road earlier this year. You kind of felt like Patrick Mahomes took it personally that people said Lamar Jackson was going to be his rival. Deshaun Watson was going to be that guy. Well, Deshaun Watson went on the road at Arrowhead, got up 24 points, team lost, and they still haven't recovered. And he may not even be still in the Houston Texans. He might not even stay in the AFC before all is said and done. Maybe Josh Allen is going to be that guy. Now, there are older guys you can point to. You could say Russell Wilson. You could say Tom Brady. You could say Aaron Rodgers. But those guys aren't going to be in this league for very long compared to Patrick Mahomes, who is still such a transcendent talent at such a young age. And one thing you can also say here, it took Jordan a long time to win a title. It took Patrick Mahomes a couple years. He is sitting right now, Patrick Mahomes is, if you look at the dominance that the quarterback position and how well you can play well into your age of 35, 40 years old, Patrick Mahomes is sitting around right now. He's going to turn 26 in September, guys. He's still only 25 years old. And he has a very good chance on Sunday to go to his second straight Super Bowl. And so you start to look around this league and say, who are the legitimate contenders to Patrick Mahomes' throne? And I think the best analogy that exists right now in sports is there is no one. Mahomes right now is the NFL's version of Jordan. And if he goes out and he beats Josh Allen, which he's favored to do, his team beats their team. People are like, the quarterbacks don't play against each other. All right. Understood. Yes, they do. Your quarterback is going up against another quarterback because that's how you end up with a final score. Yes, Josh Allen's not trying to tackle Patrick Mahomes in the open field or vice versa. But these are the two guys that are going to dictate who wins the football game, by and large. Many times in the NFL, you can just pick who's going to win a game simply by looking at the quarterback position, because the variety of quarterback play and the amount of difference and differential between a quarterback is a lot different than the differential in any other position on the football field. And I'm not saying that these other guys aren't good. I'm not saying that Josh Allen can't be good, or that Lamar Jackson can't be good, or Baker Mayfield can't be good, or Deshaun Watson can't be good. But everybody right now in Patrick Mahomes' generation feels like those 1990s era Jordan challengers. Patrick Ewing, Clyde Drexler, John Stockton, Karl Malone, Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, Charles Barkley. You run through all those different guys. They're all great. Many of them are Hall of Fame talents, but none of them are remotely close to the transcendent excellence of Michael Jordan in that era. Well, what about right now with Patrick Mahomes? Tell me who is a guy that you take head-to-head against him. You might feel like Aaron Rodgers is the answer. You might feel like Tom Brady is the answer. But those dudes are either, in Brady's case, 43, or in Aaron Rodgers' case, I believe 38, almost 40 years old. They're not going to be competing against Patrick Mahomes for the vast majority of his career. And if you presume that Mahomes, who is a pocket passer, I know he can run sometimes, he's a decent athlete, but he's primarily a pocket passer. If you presume that if he wants to play, he's going to play for the next 15 years, he's already got the Chiefs three straight years into the AFC Championship. How many times is he going to play in conference championship games? And how long is he going to play at an incredibly high level? I think the answer is a long time, and I think the answer is at a really high level. And so as you start to break this down, I'm just leaving you with this question. As we get ready for the AFC Championship game, is that storyline going to change? Is somebody going to rise up? Could be Joe Burrow. Could be Josh Allen. Could be Tua. Could be somebody coming into the draft this year. Maybe it's Trevor Lawrence. Maybe it's Justin Fields. Is someone young going to rise up? Maybe it's Justin Herbert. And legitimately be able to challenge Patrick Mahomes? Or are we in, right now, the beginning of the Jordan era of the NFL starring Patrick Mahomes? We're going to start to get some answers on Sunday, and I can't wait to see what those answers are. Going to continue to break down the AFC and the NFC championship games as we roll through the program. Up next, we are scheduled to be joined by my guy, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Get some picks from him as we get ready for the AFC and the NFC championship game. What does he think is going to happen there? We may also dive a little bit into the NBA, the NHL, and college basketball. Other sports that you may have noticed are going on right now that typically on this show we're not focusing on, because this is, by the way, the last weekend with multiple football games that we're going to be able to watch until August. So you better enjoy these games.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We are rolling through the program. Just talked all about the AFC Championship game. Going to be talking a lot about the NFC Championship game as well. We bring in my Fox Bet Live co-host, one of the four of us that is on the program with me every single Monday through Friday, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Furman, you are on a run the likes of which I have never seen with your college basketball gambling. I think you're 3-20 in your last 23 bets, if I'm not mistaken. Is that the worst run you can remember being on in one specific sport ever?
Oh, hands down, and it's a direct correlation to how much work and effort that I've actually put into my college basketball this year. I'm embarrassed to even share and circulate it for show purposes, but it's the sport so low on the pecking order for me. The results there, I'd much be in a better place if I was flipping coins than actually trying to put in a few minutes here and there. But the gambling gods are a fickle lot, and thankfully when it comes to betting sports, that is so low in terms of my share of wallet and bankroll that I can at least laugh about it, although the red figures continue to mount up.
It is fascinating how that can happen sometimes, but when you look, like last night, you had, I think, the under in the first half, and the two teams combined to shoot 15 of 25 from three, which is, I mean, 60% is crazy from anywhere on the field. much less to shoot 60% in a college game for, on both teams.
There's no doubt that so much of what goes into handicapping is looking at your numbers over the long haul and not falling victim to short-term variance. And I talk about this all the time, and this may be a little bit more technical than some of your listenership wants to hear, but there's a big difference in terms of identifying a bad beat versus a bad bet. You can have a game like last week between Cleveland and Kansas City. I had over 27.5 in the first half. Rashad Higgins fumbles the ball through the end zone, and ultimately Kansas City comes down, kicks a field goal. The first half falls 22. I don't feel that anything that was done there was a bad bet. They actually outgained what we saw in the Saints and Tampa Bay Bucks game later in the afternoon. So you never want to fall victim to that short-term variance if you're going to do this long-term. It does get annoying. It leaves you wanting to pull your hair out. But like you suggested, 60% shooting from beyond the arc, you're not going to win a whole lot of college basketball unders when that's the case.
Yeah, there's no doubt at all about that. We're talking to Todd Furman at Todd Furman on Twitter. Obviously, the story of the weekend as we get ready on Friday to roll into the weekend is the AFC and the NFC championship game. Let's start in the AFC. What's standing out in particular to you? Obviously, it's Mahomes' health. It appears he's going to play. And I got to give credit to you because a decade ago or more when we first started doing radio together, you had a phrase that I think is really a lot of people are learning as, you know, more and more states are starting sports gambling. Every line tells a story. What is the line in the Chiefs game against the Buffalo Bills telling us so far?
It's telling us that odds makers believe Patrick Mahomes will be the starting quarterback come Sunday afternoon at Arrowhead, but they want official clarification that he is ultimately going to be named the starter, but once he passes concussion protocol, that's when this number will disappear from the market. And what do I mean by that? Three suggests that it's kind of a hybrid. They're under the assumption that 80% probability, if not higher, Mahomes is going to be that guy. Because if Chad Henne had the inside track to play, we'd be talking about Buffalo, a short road favorite. And it's once we get official confirmation that Mahomes is the starter, expect this number to tick up in that 3.5-4 range. The real question, Clay, I don't know how long that's going to last, because you could see an appetite for Buffalo even with Mahomes announced in. And I think that remains the biggest question in this game. The one nice luxury of sports gambling continues to grow. The recreational bettor out there who wants to make a case for Kansas City, they're waiting for Adam Schefter, Jason LaCanfora, Jay Glazer, et cetera, to say that Mahomes is cleared to play. That number will move. They'll lay the worst of the number, won't think twice about it. But in reality, they're doing themselves a huge disservice.
Okay, so Patrick Mahomes, a lot of discussion about his concussion-related story. That doesn't seem to be a major issue. Are you concerned, and we're going to talk, by the way, to Dr. David Chow in the third hour about the health status of Mahomes and everybody else who's playing in these games. Are you concerned about his foot at all, which may be more impactful in terms of its actual impact on the field come Sunday?
I was coming into the week, and Dr. Chow will break down a lot more footage, and he'll be a much better voice when it comes to all things medical than I can be. But the Chiefs put out a video from Wednesday's practice that showed Mahomes kind of going through one of his progressions and scrambling out of the pocket. That alleviated some of the concerns I had about his foot. Do I think he'll be 100%? Absolutely not. And can he re-aggravate it? There's no doubt about it. But there's so many different ways the Chiefs can prepare that foot, whether it means putting a metal plate in there to try and help take care of his turf toe, or if they'll shoot him up. So when it comes to a quarterback, I don't think it's as big a deal as it would be, say, a Tyreek Hill who had to get in and out of his cuts. Because if Mahomes' foot starts to bother him, they'll just make him a little bit more of a pocket passer, and it'll eliminate some of the playbook. Whereas if he wasn't moving real well in Wednesday's limited practice, still going through concussion protocol, I'd be a lot more concerned that, hey, look, the Bills are going to try and pin their ears back and come after Mahomes, knowing that he doesn't have a whole lot of mobility in the pocket.
Would you rather, we had a discussion about this yesterday on the show, and I've talked about it a little bit already on this show, would you rather them play one game on Saturday in the NFL and one game on Sunday, or do you like the back-to-back scenario on Sunday?
I like the back-to-back scenario. It's what we've grown accustomed to, and maybe I'm a creature of habit, but I think what happens if you play one on Saturday and one on Sunday, and the game happens to be a blowout on Saturday and you watch a quarter or two, then some of that momentum starts to wane a little bit. At least here, if the first game is a dud or even if the first game is a classic, you have something to hang your hat on. I love the format here, and I know with 2 weeks it doesn't give any of these teams an unfair rest advantage either, but I think the NFL has found a blueprint that's worked, so I'm more than comfortable with them doing it. I actually just wish the game on Sunday started a little bit earlier. It's a lot waiting till noon out here on the West Coast when you've grown accustomed to college football at 9 a.m. on Saturdays and the NFL, of course, normally at 10.
I actually think that's the best thing about being on the West Coast. You know, when I was a kid and all the way up through my teenage years and into my early 20s, I used to complain about early kicks, you know, because I was like, I want to go tailgate. I want to be able to hang out. Also, you're more likely to be out late the night before. And so you want to sleep in a little bit as opposed to having... Now, with three young kids and a radio show that starts at 5 a.m. my time every day, when it gets to Saturday and Sunday, I wake up early and I'm like, man, when are these games actually going to kick off? You know, like I'm just moping around the house waiting, you know, 4 or 5 hours for a game to actually kick off, sometimes longer than that. So I've totally flipped as I've gotten older. I love the 11 a.m. kicks now, Central Time, and I loved being on the West Coast because, you know, let's say you wake up at 7:30 or 8 in the morning. By 9 a.m., there are games underway.
Oh, it's tremendous. And I think the best part about it, not only do games kick off earlier if you're a morning person, it's that they end earlier. You get Monday Night Football that'll kick off at 5:15, and you're not waiting until 10:30, 11 o'clock.
You can go out to dinner. And watch the whole game.
You can still have a life afterwards, and I think about it from a young viewer standpoint. If you have small kids, you're much better suited to allow them to watch games in their entirety on the West Coast.
No doubt.
You've talked about it at great length, not only for the NFL, but look at the NBA playoffs. When games tip off at 10:35 Eastern time, when you're talking about the Lakers and some of the higher-profile teams, I'm gassed by 10:30 Pacific time. I can't imagine what people feel like at 1:30 in the morning on the East Coast when sporting events wrap up.
We're talking to Todd Furman at Todd Furman on Twitter. All right, let's go to the NFC. Game. The Packers have been on an absolute roll. Games in Lambeau, some possibility there might be a little bit of snow. It's going to be cold. Aaron Rodgers, MVP presumptively of the season, even though it's not quite official. And meanwhile, Tom Brady, the ageless wonder, taking the Bucs on the road for a third straight week, trying to return them to home so they could play in the Super Bowl in their home stadium. For the first time in NFL history, that would be happening. How do you see this one shaking out with the Packers around a 3 or 3.5 point favorite, depending on where you look?
Well, one of the numbers I was blown away with in digging into this game a little bit, that this will be the first time that Aaron Rodgers will play an NFC title game at home. You look at the impressive resume he's put together, and you go, oh, they must have played an NFC championship at Lambeau. But no, au contraire, this will be the first time. When you look at some of the numbers, too, in this game, it's fascinating. Since the wild card round began back in 1978, teams to play their third straight road game, which obviously applies to the Bucks here, just 5-12 against the spread, 4-13 straight up in the conference championship. The teams that have won those games, well, Green Bay back in 2010, the Giants in 2007, and the Steelers in 2005. Before that, you have to go back 20 years to the 85 Patriots. But I look at some of the matchups that we're going to see here, and the biggest concern I have for Tampa is their secondary. If they can't bring pressure, forget about it. Aaron Rodgers is going to pick them apart with a healthy Devontae Adams, who was just returning from injury the first time around. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is a more than capable deep threat. And Alan Lazard wasn't out there. The problem I have with Green Bay, and everyone wants to talk about a slightly resurgent defense, is the fact that they haven't really faced an offense nearly as dynamic as what Tampa is going to bring to the table. Now, Byron Leftwich has to be smarter with his game plan. He can't decide he wants to run it every time on first down. But Green Bay's interior run defense is the biggest question mark, and that may actually work to their benefit. Tom Brady could potentially have a ton of success if they let him throw early and often. And when I look at this game, at 3.5 or better, I'd make a case for the Bucs. At 3, I probably wouldn't dabble, but that's where I'm leaning right now. And that's factoring in all my disdain for Green Bay over the last couple seasons and openly admitting that they've owned a piece of my soul and especially my gambling bankroll.
Do you think that right now we have Green Bay has moved into a small favorite right now with four teams remaining to win the Super Bowl? Do you think Green Bay is the best team left right now among these four, or would you make the Chiefs the presumptive favorite if you had to pick who's most likely to hoist the trophy at the end of the year?
I think if you're backing out everything here, and of course what you're going to see reflected in those current Super Bowl odds from FanDuel is the home field advantage that Kansas City has working in their favor in the late game. And the Green Bay will have working in their favor, obviously, in the early game at Lambeau. I mean, if you're talking about Tampa and Green Bay on a neutral, this number isn't anywhere close to 3. You're talking about it closer to 1. And a similar scenario for Buffalo and Kansas City. Now, you can't ignore the fact that these teams have to go on the road and try and win these games. I would make the case that going right now that Tampa is probably the most complete football team out of all of them there. I just worry about their inexperience on a stage this large and not being able to fall back on the luxury of Bill Belichick as the consummate professional on the sidelines compared to Bruce Arians. Kansas City, for me, not nearly as good this year overall as they were a season ago. The problem for the rest of the league is that Patrick Mahomes is only getting better, and he's been able to mask some of their issues this season. And while they haven't covered numbers, the one concern that you have to have, this offense, when it's wanted to, has gone out there and put up crooked numbers. It was dynamic in the first half against Cleveland. It's built 17-point leads against some of the best teams in the league. And if Kansas City commits to it and wants to be there from start to finish offensively, I don't know if there's any of these trio of teams that remain that can really stop them.
If you had to set the over-under right now, we're talking to Todd Furman, Fox Bet Live. You can see him with me every single afternoon on television. If you had to set an over-under on number of years that Tom Brady will play in the NFL, not counting this one, obviously, going forward, what would you set it at?
I would set it at 1.5, and I'm going to juice the over. The reason I say that is because I think 2 years probably makes the most sense. I'm not sure Tom is going to play past 45, and you also have to wonder what this Bucs roster looks like. Rob Gronkowski has said he wants to come back. We'll see if Antonio Brown is ultimately in the fold. Chris Godwin becomes a free agent after this offseason. And Tom has already gone through playing without weapons. So as soon as he would start to see a deterioration potentially of this Tampa roster, if these guys can command a lot more money on the open market, he's got nothing left to prove. And I don't think he would play if there weren't the pieces around him that would allow them to compete for yet another Super Bowl.
We're talking to Todd Furman this weekend. We also have a UFC event, which is going to get a lot of attention on Saturday. It's the first Saturday since August that we haven't had a college football game. What do you expect to see in that Saturday fight? And more importantly, for everybody out there who there tends to be a ton of fans, when you actually break it down, what do you think of the big matchup? Do you buy into that the right guy is favored?
In which, then the Conor McGregor fight you're
yes.
referring to, Clay?
Yeah, that's the big fight that I'm talking about. Because most people in UFC, I should have clarified, but most people in hardcore UFC fans can have different opinions. But the average sports fan out there listening to me, I think, is pretty much paying attention to Conor McGregor.
Yeah, when you look at this number here, Conor actually opened right around $1.75 favorite. He's been bet out to $3. And what's interesting about UFC in terms of the way this sport gets bet, a lot of recreational bettors won't bet Conor McGregor straight. And what do I mean when I say that? They're not going to walk up to the window or pull out their FanDuel app and put up $3 to win a dollar coming back. They're going to parlay Conor to some of the earlier fights that are taking place on the card. They're going to parlay him to the NFL games that are taking place on Sunday as well. So what you're going to see here is I think you're going to see a lot of the recreational bettors putting up a little to root against Conor and taking that price with Poirier versus the professionals are going to gravitate towards Conor. I think he's in better shape if you believe what Dana White said and the optimism coming out of his camp. I'm of the mindset that Conor doesn't come out of this retirement, and I put it in air quotes, to fight unless it's a match he can win. I think a loss would be hugely damaging to what kind of earning potential he would have going forward.
No doubt at all, Todd Furman. I know you're a busy guy. I appreciate you getting up early with us on the West Coast, and I'll see you on television later today.
You got it. Always a pleasure, boys.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
My thanks to Todd Furman, who just joined us. He's fired up for the last weekend of multiple football games. I'm fired up for the last weekend of multiple football games. And maybe, just possibly maybe, Detroit Lion fans are fired up about Dan Campbell. Now, they've been fired up about a lot of coaches over the years that have come in that they thought were going to finally reverse the awfulness of their existence as a sports fan base. And I kind of am somewhat familiar, I would say, with the situation in Detroit because my wife is from Detroit. So a lot of her family would talk about the Lions with me, and I feel like I've experienced it a little bit more. You know, the Lions have not won a playoff game in 29 years, and they only have one playoff win since 1957. I know everybody out there has been dogging the Houston Texans over the Deshaun Watson relationship and everything else. Think about how crazy that is. All the way back to 1957. Dwight Eisenhower, I believe, was president of the United States then. It was only a little over a decade after World War II ended. The Lions have won one playoff game during that time. One! And by the way, the Bengals have gone 30 years without, sorry, Bengals fans. The Bengals have gone 30 years without a playoff win. But 29 years in the NFL where, in theory, parity rules the day? I don't even understand how that is hardly possible purely from like a coin flip type perspective. It's like flipping a coin and having it land on heads 100 times in a row. That's kind of what the Lions had to pull off in order to only have one playoff game since 1957. Well, Dan Campbell has now been hired, and Dan Campbell met the media and had his press conference, and we have pulled 30 seconds from it that I want to play for you right here. And here is Dan Campbell breaking everything down.
So this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right. And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right. That's going to be the mentality.
All right. This is unbelievable. This is amazing. I kind of understand if you're a guy in the trenches, if you're an offensive or defensive lineman, how you would want to embrace this gladiatorial style combat. But if you are Matthew Stafford and you have seen coaches come and go and it doesn't seem to matter who they are, you find a way to be on a team that still loses. Are you now in the back nine of your career in any way convinced that Dan Campbell is going to change things for you? Is this like the cerebral assassin that you think you might need in order to make your offensive attack more efficient than it's ever been before to get you past Aaron Rodgers in the NFC North, Kirk Cousins, and whoever the Bears end up with quarterback? No. Look, I hope Dan Campbell is a successful coach because I feel bad for Lions fans. I root as a fan of the NFL for new fan bases to have success because I don't want the same fan base to get to win over and over and over again. For instance, I would rather see the Bills win than I would to see the Chiefs win just because I think the Chiefs are going to be there time after time after time. And so it's easier for me to root for the Bills, who haven't been to the Super Bowl since they had since Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and that crew was out there running up and down the sideline. And so it's just a lot easier for me to root for the new team than it is to root for the old team, right? It's easier for me, for instance, to root for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Tom Brady than it was to root for the New England Patriots with Tom Brady. I would like for everybody to be able to experience a championship at some point in time, as opposed to one team hog a ton in a row, like I think the Kansas City Chiefs, if you heard me in the open of the show, are going to inevitably end up doing. But this is a fun, engaging press conference. It isn't a press conference that, if I'm Matthew Stafford and potentially my time in Detroit could be over, convinces me that suddenly we're going to make a playoff run and win a division title with Dan Campbell. How do you think? How would you respond if you heard this? If you heard this press conference and you're Matthew Stafford, Dub?
I'd probably start crying. I mean, how much more does he have to go through? This is not the press conference you want to hear. I mean, imagine Lions fans. You just mentioned since 1957, one playoff win.
They've had one playoff win since 1957.
God, I feel so sorry for Detroit Lions fans. I truly do. I mean, it is a sad, sad existence. And then you get all excited and your new head coach is spewing this kind of stuff. And they gave him a six-year deal.
Since the Super Bowl started, the Detroit Lions have won one playoff game. I mean, think about how incredible. I'm not saying I have been to one Super Bowl. I'm saying since the Super Bowl started, what are we at, 55 now? I get all confused like many of you do with the with all the Roman numerals. I think last year was Live. wasn't it? LIV, the Roman numeral 54.
We're on 55 coming up in February.
Yeah. So I think we're on 55 right now. Since the, and obviously 1957 is a pre-Super Bowl era, so it even goes back further than there. But just to crystallize that for everybody out there, since the Super Bowl started, since we began to call the championship in the NFL the Super Bowl, we have had one playoff win for the Detroit Lions. That's unfathomable. I don't, it may be the most remarkable stat in the NFL right now to even think about how impossible that is to pull off. And now Dan Campbell is in, and so he's going after your kneecaps. Tonya Harding style. Look out. He's going to go after both of them. He's going to Nancy Kerrigan everybody out there. Oh, my goodness. All right, when we come back, I'll talk about the guy that I find it a little bit hard to root for when he was with the New England Patriots, but really enjoy watching now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Going to talk about Brady and Rodgers and that NFC Championship game to start off the second hour of the program. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis.